Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Rugby Report podcast. I'm Johnny Goldsmith, joined by the lads who made the hugely anticipated Netflix series Sun Until I Die. It's Leo Pullman, Ben Turner, and Suits from Football 73. Yeah, all right, lads.
Hello.
Yeah, hi, good, very good, mate.
Tell us a little bit about yourselves for those listening who don't know who Football 73 are. Could you give us a brief overview of what you guys do?
Football 73 is a production company. We make all kinds of content. We made the Class of 92. We made the recent Iron Bolt film about Usain Bolt. We make the Late Late Show in LA and Carpool Karaoke. But most importantly, we made Sun Until I Die. We set this company up 10, 12 years ago, called the company after the end of the ground at Roker Park where we used to stand as kids, and obviously 73 when we last won something of major significance. And the dream has always been to make a series where we were given access to the club that we love. And now that we've done that, we're kind of done. This is it.
Yes. How did you become Sun supporters? I'm hearing from the accent. It's obviously not a local accent, but did you grow up here?
Well, yeah, Leo grew up in the Northeast. Our family were based in Sunderland. Many of them moved down to London, but the thing that's kind of kept everyone together is the Sunderland connection. It allows the tiniest of members of the family to talk to the oldest members of the family and have something in common. And so when we set the company up, because we're mainly cousins, old friends and family, we needed a name that kind of reflected where we came from.
The time that we spent together as kids was mainly at football. It was Gabe and Ben coming to a game with their dad and their uncle, meeting up with me and my dad and brother and going to a game and standing in the rain at Roker Park and almost inevitably watching us lose.
What about yourself, Suits?
Actually, I'm not a Sunderland fan.
That is not true.
Sorry, I wasn't a Sunderland fan till I came up here. But it was amazing hearing the stories from these boys about their time as football fans. And was it Colchester you went and blagged your way in at the end of the season to pretend, like, on the pretense?
Colchester, in the promotion run, there was only like 200 away fan tickets and we didn't get one. So we called up Colchester and told them we were making a documentary about football and football fans, and they gave us press passes to go and get on the pitch with the yellow jackets on to enable us to go to the game. When Sunderland scored the first goal, we over-celebrated a touch, given that we were on the sideline. Colchester fans kind of spotted maybe we weren't press, and we ended up diving for cover into the Sunderland end.
And this is one of many. So when Gabe made a film and was on Soccer AM as a guest, and when he was on, so the researchers were asking us for sort of footage and stuff like that. And we've got this footage of Gabe going nuts in the Derby game from, which was it? It was beating Newcastle. Was it? Yeah, I think was it the Richardson free kick? When Richardson scored the free kick and scored, and then cut to the crowd and they're all going nuts. And if you look in one of the corners, there's Gabe like jumping up and down his parka. Ben's not in shot because he's turned around and is hugging someone else from behind. But these boys are proper Sunderland fans. They're Mackham through and through. And so, yeah, I've sort of been living a bit vicariously through them for this, and then came and got involved yesterday and saw it for myself firsthand.
Tell them what you told me earlier in the lift about what your experience of being in Sunderland.
Oh yeah, well we were just talking. Obviously, we're talking about it because that's what we do when we're up here. And wherever you go, people talk about the passion of football, right? And everyone, England fans think they're the most passionate football fans in the world. They're clearly not. When you go to South America and other parts of Europe, you see that, like, I would say that the football fans there are, like, fully fanatic. And actually, as England fans, we're not that passionate. We've been, like, home games, you see someone playing a trumpet and banging a drum every now and then, but you sort of sit there and enjoy it and support. But I think the North East is different, and I think Sunderland fans are different. And I think that they actually do deliver on being the passionate fans that you hear about more than anyone else. And yeah, being a part of that and seeing that was one of the, stepping into this world, that was one of the things that really struck me, not knowing much about this club other than just being a football fan and, you know, sort of seeing Sunderland through the eyes of a supporter of a different club. And look, we're lucky enough to do loads of different things, travel the world, meet different people. But I would say that making this series, being exposed to that passion, sort of mirrors the sort of passion that we've seen when we do things like with One Direction. You see the fans for them, or a couple of others, but in a lot of other in a lot of other circumstances, you don't see that passion. But that is the one thing that I sort of saw.
I love that. Can you quote Shoots on that? That Sunderland fans are the One Direction fans of football. That is, love, love that.
Compliment.
Yeah, make that a hashtag. But for you guys, obviously, living away from Sunderland, but you still follow the club. What's it like, because obviously you're very busy, what's it like following the club for people who perhaps don't live in the area?
Well, we grew up, I mean, Leo grew up in up here in the Northeast. Me and Gabe grew up in London. And so it was more away games than home games. I mean, coming up to Sunderland for me as a kid was just the most exciting thing in the world. And walking into a stadium where the majority of the fans were Sunderland fans, and with that atmosphere, was just like, for me, it was like hallowed turf. I mean, most of my experience would be sitting, we would go in the 80s. So when I was a little kid, my dad would often take us, like, in the family enclosure. And so I'd spend a lot of time around London grounds with, like, the entire stadium on their feet and me with my head in my hands. So, like, to come home was always such an amazing thing. I think there's a romance to Sunderland, and particularly the Sunderland Club Shop, that really stays with us. And I think, you know, we over the years when we were students and started working and didn't really have any commitments, and we'd come up a hell of a lot more.
There was one particular season, the 15 points.
Yeah.
The 15 point season, we got more points on our licenses driving up and down to home games than the club got that season.
Yeah.
That's genuinely true.
Wow. I mean, with the internet and stuff as well, I guess it's not as difficult for yourself, Leo, to perhaps stay up to date with what's going on in Sunderland as well. You know, obviously.
Yeah,
it's not the same atmosphere, but.
No, it's not at all. And as Ben said, even at this age, you still get a massive tingle out of coming to a home game. Mm. And now that the three of us have got kids, and we've all got boys who are between the age of like 4 and 2.5, and having them get excited about Sunderland, and I mean, they don't understand yet what we've burdened them with yet. I mean, they will do sooner or later, and they'll hate us for it. But right now, they're excited at the idea of being Sunderland fans. And we're bringing them up to their first home game, the Bristol game, in a couple of weeks.
Oh, yes.
And that kind of reignites that passion in you. You know what I mean? It's then you realise you've got to start going to games again, because you've got to bring them. And that's really special.
And walking around the club now and just like having filmed there for a season, well, season and a half now, and just knowing everybody around the club even better, you know, all the people on all the doors and the chefs and just like the infrastructure of the club is really special, you know, after all those years. And those people are really special. And I think they come across as that in the show when you watch it.
Yeah.
Going back to your point about like with the internet and how it's sort of changed how you stay in touch. We've got a WhatsApp group, which is the three boys and myself. And obviously, some of the games that these guys can come up to last year while we were making the first series, but I was there for every game, so I was there filming, and leading up to it, we'd chat, and they would straight on like, what's the lineup, what's going on, and they would be asking me, but also be searching the internet for all the sort of information, and then we'd be shooting the game or, you know, going in for interviews and all that sort of stuff. I'd come back, and sometimes I wouldn't be able to keep my phone on me because you're working, but the amount of messages that would fill that group during a game, every single game, would just drain the battery. So I couldn't contact anyone else. We needed to chat to Borley to try and organise an interview afterwards. Couldn't get in touch with him because the messages that these boys had been sending each other had just like completely wiped the battery.
Most of them abusive.
We get that on the Rock Report. We've got a WhatsApp group as well. And so during the games, it's like, you don't miss a thing. If you're not there, it's all right. Yeah. Just read through the conversation. But how does it feel to be on Wearside today and being around the people who've worked hard in Sunderland to make this possible, really?
I landed this morning back from a job. I was in South Africa this time yesterday. Oh. So flew back. And on the train on the way up here with the guys, I'm genuinely excited to see everyone because it was a horrendous year last year, but the people within the club were amazing. I fell in love with the people and the place a little bit, and it's really exciting to see them tonight, actually. I'm excited to see the reaction to it.
It's pretty surreal. I mean, I wasn't joking at the beginning, you know, when I said about the history of the company and the kind of people that we've worked with, the kind of shows we've made, the films we've made. But if you'd asked us in 2006, when we set this up, what our dream job would have been, it wouldn't have been this. It would have been to make an end-of-season DVD for the club.
We begged the club for years.
We said we'd do it for free, just to have the chance to, you know, cut some Sunderland footage. And they always turn us down. So to now be here today and the series to be launching, it genuinely does feel like the absolute highlight of everything we've done over the last 10 or 12 years.
And we had this, like, it was amazing this week. Netflix started sending through all like the artwork, you know, on the homepage that it's going to be there and the trailers that they've cut out the season. It's just like unbelievable. We felt really emotional. It's like, because we've spent I spent a lifetime trying to explain to people why I'm a Sunderland fan. Even Sunderland fans would ask me, like, I remember coming to like one of the playoff games against Crystal Palace, the leg up at the Stadium of Light, and the fans were like, why are you in the Sunderland then? I was like, you know, because I love Sunderland. Couldn't get it why I'd like still, yes. what I was even doing there. And I'm just watching these trailers come through and it's gone, we've done it, we've packaged it, it's gone out there. They've watched it and recut it and sent it back to us. And it's like, it doesn't, they've got a few different trailers for it. There's like one about the fans, there's one of the players, one of the coaches. And it just really does express something of like this thing that we've loved our whole lives and spoken about our whole lives and obsessed upon our whole lives and told people that it's special. And now it's going to be on this global platform. Hundreds of millions of people are going to watch it.
Is it available in the United States as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's around the world.
There's 135 million subscribers to Netflix, and every single one of them is going to have the chance to watch a series about Sunderland, our club.
I mean, for you guys, it must be, as you say, a dream come true. Mm. But take us right back to the start of this. What made you decide, you know what, we're going to make a series about Sunderland and we're going to let the whole world see it here? What made you decide you want to do that?
Well, we just always wanted to do it. It's really true. This is the thing we wanted to do. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing was how to pitch it to Netflix, that Sunderland are the club to do it on. I mean, like, Leo's an incredible salesman.
Thanks.
And this one was particularly personal because Sunderland, unlike other clubs, well, every club's got a story, but things happen in Sunderland. It's never boring here.
Yeah.
And so we, rather than do like a mid-table Premiership team, I mean, we thought it was going to be the return. You know, it was going to be amazing because you'd see a club rebuild and go back to the Premiership. That was the sell. But it's also that it's also something very special about the area of Sunderland and the role that this football club plays to the city of Sunderland and kind of the role that the city of Sunderland plays in England. It's a kind of microcosm of a lot of like big themes that are playing out across world politics that somehow work their way into this club and into that story. I just hope that when it comes out, it really does sort of touch people across the pond and all over the world, and they see a bit of their own kind of story in that. I mean, that was the sell.
As a Sunderland fan myself, just to see this happen, it's bizarre, really. It's kind of surreal to think that, because, you know, you've got the Manchester City one, there's the one about Juventus, and then there's one about Sunderland. And it's like, wow, it's my club getting this kind of thing. It's good for us as well. You know, you've got like Goal as well, where you see Newcastle United's on
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely.
But the great thing about that was that it was shite. So.
And also, going in a serious note, going back to those other two, the major difference between this and those two is that this is much better than those two as well.
Yeah. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, but I really want to keep saying, I don't get too involved in it on Twitter, but I keep wanting to reply to people and just being like, to two types of people, Sunderland fans being, oh my God, how am I going to want to watch this? Last season was bad enough. I just want to say to them, it's made by people who love the club. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't, you know, it's made by Wiz. It's not like the Man City documentary is made by an American production company who want to come in here and put soccer on the screen. It's not the same thing. This is made by people who really love the club, and conversely to people from other clubs who are laughing about it. It's deeper than that. It's deeper than the other football films that you may have seen before.
Yes.
Because it's made with real love about, you know.
Let's talk about the club itself. Were they easy to get in contact with to suggest that you want to get the cameras involved in the training rooms and a bit closer than before? How were they with that?
We had a good relationship. We knew a lot of people at the club. We knew the owner at the time, Ellis Short and Martin Bain. And we started talking to them, actually. It was about two-thirds of the way through the Premiership season, the season we got relegated. And so there was still, at that point, the hope that we do what we'd done the previous 3 or 4 years, which is survive in the most dramatic of fashion and have another year in the Premiership. So when we started talking to them about it, the idea was to follow them in the Premiership if they survived. The pitch to the club, the pitch to Ellis, was very much about building the Sunderland brand. It was about the idea there was 135 million Netflix viewers, and just think of the commercial upside of allowing the club to be seen by the rest of the world. And also, with it being made by Sunderland fans, it wasn't like, you know, we were going to dig to find the dirt. We were just going to tell the story as it unfolded. So that was relatively simple. When the club were relegated, it obviously became a little trickier. Although, again, the pitch at that point was, let the world see you guys turn this around. Let the world see the club win promotion, Phoenix from the Flames, do what Newcastle had done the previous year, storm the Championship, a division that traditionally we're really, really good at. And so, again, it seemed like a relatively easy pitch, or relatively easy comparatively. And the club bought into it. Obviously, once they'd done so and the cameras were rolling, then as the season panned out, it wasn't like they could stop us from filming at any point during. So, you know, the rest is history, I guess.
There's always a bit of sort of give and take with the access. Whenever you do this kind of documentary, it depends on the relationship you build. Whatever's written down on paper about what's agreed, it depends on the relationship you build with the people there. And it was complicated because very quickly the manager was under pressure and his feet, and everyone in the club is suddenly like wondering whether they actually want to be filmed, you know, doing what they're doing on a daily basis. And then the manager gets sacked, so you've got to build a relationship with someone new.
Go back a step. We pitched it originally to David Moyes. The first pitch was David Moyes. And then obviously he was fired. So then we were on to Grayson, as Ben rightly says. Then it was on to Chris and so on and so forth. So we went through numerous times. We had to start again and build these relationships. And that was definitely tough.
Yeah, I mean, so you were on the front line of that, so yeah, you should talk about it a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot tougher than some of the stuff we'd done. You know, if we're doing, for example, we're making a film with Usain Bolt, we work in small teams, so there'd be, say, 4 or 5 of us go over to Jamaica for a certain period of filming, a little chapter that we need for it. And really, when you're looking at breaking a relationship, or sorry, building a relationship with him and his team, you're talking about 3 of them. So you're talking about his manager, him, and his agent. So you can spend a lot, you don't have to spend as much time building a relationship with 3 people as you do, for example, with an entire football club, where you've got CEO, management, staff, players, fans. You know, we're trying to build relationships with the whole city. And also, you forget about the period of time we're talking about, because football just is never ending. It continues. We're already into a new season. We're already into a new manager. We're already into bringing up to Christmas, almost another second of their transfer windows with that new manager. You forget about the period we're talking about. And you're talking about a period where we're trying to build relationships, where the previous manager nearly lost his job for a comment made about, you know, with the BBC, about the joke with the female member of staff. So understandably, football clubs don't necessarily, aren't traditionally known for opening their doors. And this one as well had reasons to not want cameras anywhere near them for a host of reasons.
Yeah, the club have a pretty checkered history over the last couple of years with, you know, internal dramas.
So it wasn't the easiest job, but we got there and we kept going. And I think the series is brilliant, and I think it is a brilliant access doc. It isn't like the Man City doc where we're dancing around in the changing rooms, but that's what was happening in the changing rooms last year at this football club. So the series does reflect what was going on here, which is a different story.
And most of the team weren't even in the change room.
It's almost a dream for Sunderland fans to be able to access, you know, the club behind the scenes, to be able to film what's going on. I mean, obviously, apart from brilliant, I guess, what was it like for you guys?
It was a paradoxical thing, because the drama of what was going on was amazing for the documentary. I mean, like, when you set out at the beginning to shoot something like this, it's 8 episodes. So, like, how are you going to fill that? You know, when you think about how you're going to fill those 8 episodes, sometimes you think about, you know, they're going to be a stretch of, say, like, on a promotion till and we're just winning game after game. What are you going to put in those shows to make it interesting? Well, I mean, from that perspective, last year, you know, if you get through 2 managers, you know, transfer windows, all the kinds of different things that happen, you're almost struggling to be able to get all of that into it. But as a fan, it's quite painful. And it's interesting because you have different instincts within you. You know, like, all the fans were very, very tough on, like, let's say Martin Bain. Mm. You know, but we got to know him quite well. And, you know, well, the guy made mistakes and there's plenty of wrong things about it. But he really cared about it. He was working really hard to try and turn it around.
And he had his hands tied behind his back by an owner who'd completely given up. I mean, yeah. Martin Bain was, you know, as we said before, he's working 22-hour days and doing the job of 7 or 8 different people just to try and keep the club afloat. And people see him as this stooge for Ellis Short. But, you know, Ellis Short had cut off the funds and was making the job impossible.
So on the one hand, you're sitting there watching it being like, you know, fuck Martin Bain, and we need to see a victory in the moment. And then afterwards, you go and speak to him. You feel awful about it. You feel awful for him. You know, you develop that relationship and you see both sides of it.
I tell you, seeing the difference in him as well. We obviously worked with a lot of the local press. So we'd be speaking to Nick Barnes from BBC North and all the guys, Roker Report, and all these other guys weekly. And you see the mood in the place weekly. And we had a conversation with Nick Barnes towards the end of the season, and he basically said, like, you can see it. You can see the effect that this club has had on Martin. I had quite a close relationship with Martin through the filming of this, and I could see that as well. And it was quite interesting because when you're in the club, in the middle of it, you can't really say that much to everyone outside, right? Because that's the point of it. It's about trust. Once you're inside, you don't then go and spill the beans on what you're seeing and what you're learning and what you're experiencing. And then we'd go outside and we'd speak to fans, and fans would be saying to us, like Ben said, well, fuck Martin Bain, he doesn't know what he's doing, he doesn't care. And then that next afternoon, you're going back with Martin and you can see it on his face that he's trying everything he possibly can to turn it around, but without any money, how do you do that in a football club? So that was really interesting to see. The other thing about going back to what Ben was saying about what's it like as football fans to be involved and to see what everything's going on is, Ben was then heavily involved in the edit. That's one of Ben's specialities. And when you're filming it, you live it once. Mm-hmm. When you're in the edit, you live that 10 times a day, or just for hours and hours and weeks and weeks and weeks. And so, for example, at like the relegation, we knew it was coming. Everyone did. We were building up to it, and we were filming it with, you know, the story in mind. We then essentially passed that over to Ben in the edit, and he had to relive that for days and weeks and hours into the small hours of the night. So
I actually, like, we cut a kind of early sort of promo of it to show Netflix where we were going, and it was really soon after relegation, and the footage had just come in, and we pulled an all-nighter cutting it and actually cried in the edit suite because just watching us go down and get, you know, just watching it again and looking to make the drama even more, and looking at shots of all the fans heartbroken and seeing Darren Bent's going to go, you know what I mean? It was just awful. It's just like unbelievable. And it was quite cathartic in a way, because by the morning I felt like I'd sort of grieved.
Cried it all out,
yeah. And then I had to spend another 6 weeks editing the same thing over and again. It's a mixed blessing.
What about filmed in some fans' houses and watching them on a daily basis. How did you recruit fans to be part of it? Did they say they'd like to help out, or?
Well, we had a full mix. I mean, we were going around speaking to people from the first minute. The other thing about the process of that was it started off because the deal got done and the season was just about to start. So we started off with, well, just the first thing was just me on my own. I went to Scunthorpe away with a camera. And then we started to build the team sort of as the year developed. And so we were sort of working it out as we went along. And obviously you experience different things with these fans, and you see different things in them and what they might offer the series. My first interaction with the fans at Scunthorpe was I was walking around with a camera, and at one point I sat down next to this nice family from Scunthorpe, and they said, "Oh, how are you? Nice to see what you're doing here." And I couldn't really say anything. They asked me if I wanted a cup of tea. I went into the Sunderland end to film a shot from behind, and got shouted at. They said, "Who's that nonce with a camera?" And I got shouted at by the fans.
How did they know you? Amazing.
I didn't see you.
I was like, what have we signed up for? What are we getting ourselves on? And then when you start to, you know, we've all shouted things at football games, I forgive me where that was. But then you start to meet these people and you start to see, you know, what the different types of fans you have and how much it matters to them, but in different ways. And you see the different people. We wanted to represent the whole city, so we've got sort of various different fans of different backgrounds in here. And it was just a case of being out there meeting people, because as you know from being up here, everyone wants to chat to anyone. Mm-hmm. So we just got chatting away and met some amazing people.
I remember there was one game that we were losing quite heavily in, and some fans didn't really like the camera being on them.
Yeah.
How was that when fans don't react in a particularly... Obviously, they're getting beat 3-0 and it's obvious they're not going to be happy, but how is that for someone who's holding a camera to have fans who just want you to keep away and...
Yeah, it was quite traumatic actually for the cameraman who he got sort of wrestled to the ground and the camera he tried to get the camera off him. It's hard in that instant. So many things happen in that moment. It's hard to then convey what we were talking before about this being made by Sunderland fans, because you can't say it at that moment. You can't go through it, and the people are just so passionate about it, and they just took their anger out. And it just boiled up, and it wasn't a nice moment, but. He was also fine. He got up back and he wanted to carry on, and it showed the sort of passion that he has for the job and that he experienced with the majority of the fans, that he wanted to pick the camera straight back up, go back out and film that game. It was down in Bristol. And he wanted to get back in there and continue his job to show what was happening in front of his very eyes. And he's an amazing cameraman. We work with him a lot. But he also cared about this place and the club and the fans. It was just a little incident that sort of boiled over.
Very passionate fans, as you say, we are. We live and breathe football up here, but obviously, as you all know. The opening video, the opening theme song, Shipyards by Sunderland-based band Lake Poets. I love that song, really emotional. Even just the opening 15 seconds, just that song is a very emotional song. How careful were you in deciding how the introductory video was put together?
Oh, like, massively. In fact, that was one of the... Because we couldn't bring absolutely everyone in the whole process into your studio. There's a guy called Richard Cook, who was one of the main producers on it, and edit producers on it, and he... That really was his kind of thing. He's actually not a Sunderland fan. He's a Villa fan. But he got into it enough to sort of get a sense of what the kind of place was all about and really felt it. And that opening sequence really was his kind of...
His baby.
Yeah, his baby. And I'd like, in a way, it feels even more significant because he wasn't a Sunderland fan, that he managed, you know, through the process of it and working through all the footage and being, you know, being up here, he sort of, you know, he got an understanding of it. And I love that. Mm-hmm. Basically, it gets me every time.
Yeah. Was the club here to take part in this, by the way?
Nope.
No.
Okay. It's just one question that they will ask.
So yeah,
of course. Unlike Man City.
Well, James Vaughan missed a penalty against Celtic in the last pre-season friendly, in which we got beat 5-0. Set the tone for the rest of the season, really. At what stage, really, in this production did you realise things might not work out the way that you expected, in the sense of going a fight back into the Premier League, going the other way?
Well, it went in degrees, I think, because... Took us quite a long time. It wasn't until around Christmas time that we started to stop talking about promotion. I don't think that was just us. I think most Sunderland fans were talking about promotion long after that we probably shouldn't have been talking about promotion. And even when Coleman came in, he was looking at the table and, can we sneak the playoffs? We all know that if you get in the playoffs at six, you're probably going to win it. And if it goes like this and that, then we can do it, you know. And even during this slide, I mean, if you remember at the end of the year, we had so many outs. I remember like walking out of the Norwich game, and like, you know, when we were up, it looked like it was gonna like really pull us out of it, and then they equalised. And afterwards, you're looking at the table, even down to the Burton game, it was very we were in touch for a long way through it.
I think that is true, that if you just were watching what was going on the pitch, you could kid yourself that there was, up to a certain point, a chance still of promotion, and up to a certain point, a chance of still of still surviving and staying up. But I think having the insight and seeing what was going on behind the scenes, seeing what was going on with the ownership, made us realize that regardless of whether we'd stayed in that division or not, there was a serious problem at the club, at the very heart of the club. And until you solved that problem, that ownership issue, it didn't really matter what division you were playing in. That was the truth of it. There was always going to be something slightly, I hate to use the word, but something slightly rotten at the centre of the club. So regardless of what was going on the pitch, that was how we viewed it.
And the club, it was about the club that were like an addict who bottomed out at the end of last season. They finally it got bad enough
that
all of the friends that weren't doing any good left, and all of like we moved back in with our parents and started rebuilding again.
That's what needed to change. The ownership needed to change for anything to change, regardless of where we were playing.
I mean, even though obviously the relegation is an awful thing for us fans, I guess, does it make better TV that it was more like heartbreaking, and there's like potential of the next series being a much happier version, a much happier series, perhaps?
I think if we'd survived in the fashion that we did in the Premiership for those 3 or 4 years under Poirier, Di Canio, Dick Advocaat, etc., that would have been a great ending, and that was the ending we all wanted, both as fans and filmmakers. Once we were relegated, you were then going, right, there needs to be something to lift this at the end. Because ultimately, to end on relegation and for Ellis Short to still be the owner would have been devastating. But then you did get that happy ending. You got that 3-0 against Wolves that came out of absolutely nowhere. Mm. You got the takeover, obviously, and Stuart Donald coming in. That gave you the ending that you needed.
Yeah. And that's before, when we were making, when we were talking about where this would go.
Yeah, every week we talk about the options.
Every week. It was like, what are the options? What are we doing? Okay, where do we go? And it was like, okay, but what do we think is going to happen and what do we want to happen, right? And that was the conversations all day. And the first conversations at the beginning of the year were, okay, it's got to be sneaking into the playoffs in the last... If you could write the script, it's tough seasons, up and downs, you know, all these sort of different controversies and all these things happening, and then we sneak into the playoffs in the last game of the season and then go on and win it at Wembley. That's one option. The other one is relegation, tough year, everything going wrong, and then just staying up in the last game now. It didn't quite pan out for either of those. It looked like it was going to happen at several points, like Ben was saying. And what you're saying as well is, because remember that these boys are fans and we all are football fans, and before 3 o'clock on a Saturday in every single game, you convince yourselves that that's the game you're going to win, right? Yeah, every single game. And so every single time we're going, yeah, but if we're going to win today, so that gives 3 points, you're doing the maths, and so then all we need to do is win another two games. So even at the end, when it was looking unlikely, every single day we were going in with the same sort of... expectations and
hope
that that was going to be the game that turned it around.
And we extended it a bit at the end, didn't we? We extended the filming period just by a little bit longer at the end, so we could get that story, because it just made such a difference to the kind of whole.
Yeah,
it's the hope I can't stand, as we say. It's often alluded to in the series that there are players with bad attitudes about the place. There's negativity surrounding the squad that ultimately led to our downfall. How well do you feel that this has been captured in the series?
Well, we start off, you forget that, again, talking about the period that we're showing, last year, we were talking about it earlier, we're starting off by talking about players like Djilabodji, Kazri,
Ndong,
Kone, all these players that didn't want to be here, made that quite clear, and that weren't, and just as bad as it was to have them here because they didn't want to be here, they weren't a good fit for the club. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there was some players here that fans didn't want here, club didn't want here.
Well, though, you look at the Darren Gibson incident. No one can look at him and be impressed by his behaviour that night after the Celtic game. But at the same time, you had a huge number of fans who came out after that clip was leaked, who said, yeah, the guy's a disgrace, he's drunk after a game, but he's saying what everyone else is thinking.
Yeah.
You know, whether he's right or wrong, he's saying what everyone else is thinking. And that was true. I mean, it didn't exactly clear the air and lead to a successful season. But I think in the series, we show enough of how difficult it was within the club in terms of the players that didn't want to be there. And there's particular focus on Jack Rodwell, for example. Yes. We got Martin Bain talking about it. We've got the clip from the physio room that alludes to it. So I think it comes across. I think it's pretty clear.
We got very close to actually having a chat with him about it as well. But just the sort of timing of it all didn't work out. But we always try and offer everyone their side of the story as well.
We would absolutely love to have had his side of the story in there. And we offered it a number of times.
Yeah.
Because what you want in a show like this is to show the complexity of the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're not looking to... You want to show... In a way, you want to show his side of it. Or like with Darren Gibson's actually an even better example. Like, by the time he left the club at the end of the season, like, and the circumstances he did and what was going on in his life, you can't really hound him for an interview. Mm. But it was really complicated what was going on in his life and the problems that he was having. Mm-hmm. You know, so... And it would have been great to... So we've got a lot of that story and we spoke to him through the season, but you know, it would have been good to have got a bit more at the end of it, in a way more for him than anybody else, because it's more complex than it looks and it's his right of reply. Definitely. That would have been
yes.
And also with everything we try and offer something that's, you know, a better insight than you would get from the papers or from a, you know, from a newspaper or anything like that. We were pushing quite hard to try and get that, to show that side, because it was such a complicated situation. And, you know, from that first incident and this first incident and the whole way through the season, one thing that was apparent is that Darren did care. He obviously has his issues, but he really did care about his club as well. And watching him turn it round as well, in this time last year, December, when he started to come through, was like, this is amazing to see. And because he did something that I think is almost impossible in terms of football, which is the relationship with the fans. He managed to turn it round. Because I think this time last year, fans were telling us, and we were seeing and experiencing it, where people were saying, oh my God, he's so important. And when he got injured around Christmas time, they were like, we're going to miss him. And he's huge. And
there was a moment it looked like if he was going to stay fit, then there was a chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the saddest sort of parts I felt was Johnny Williams.
Yeah.
Constantly trying to get that fitness back up. But he just, I don't know what it is, he just couldn't stay fit, and to the extent where they couldn't tackle him in training, keep away from him.
And he's another one. Like you've picked, there's plenty. You wanted to speak about the players that didn't care, but we're now talking about the players that do care.
Yes. Right?
On the flip side of this, and there are plenty of those. And both of those two, you're talking about Darren, who had his issues last year, but also Johnny as well. He was a lone player that came up here, and I got to know Johnny very well through the filming. Like, he's a lovely guy, and it really, really affected him. It really affected him. He wanted to do so many good things here, and he couldn't. His body just wouldn't let him do it. It just wasn't the right time. It wasn't working for him up here, and he was really frustrated that he couldn't turn it around and really help the team out. Because for him personally and for the club, like, and there's plenty of other examples as well. But you know, again, what we were saying earlier about hearing what the fans are saying out on the street, and then what you experienced within the club, were at times very different. And a lot of the players that the fans were saying, he doesn't give a shit, he doesn't care. And then you're in the inside, going in their houses and chatting with them and chatting away, you know, with the cameras off, and knowing how much they did care, were two very different things.
One of the players who a lot of the fans criticised was Lamin Kone. What was his attitude like?
The first thing to say about that was these boys actually, Fullwell actually sponsored Lamin Kone for 1 or 2 years.
I don't want to talk about it.
that's it. He didn't want to be part of the filming.
Yeah, he didn't. Okay. If you can't get him to play properly, it's even more difficult to get him to film properly.
So what was it? Difference with the two managers, working with Simon Grayson, working with Chris Coleman, how were they different to work with?
Very different. Okay. Very different. I think when he came in, Simon had a nervousness about him because I think the club was in such a tricky position that Simon was nervous about having the cameras around. He didn't want them to be part of it, as a lot of managers did, as we were talking earlier. Chris was more open to filming, but neither of them really wanted to have the cameras around. Neither of them really wanted to have the cameras around. But
Chris is naturally much more comfortable with the media, much more comfortable with his own image. I think that he was...
Well, he's more established, isn't he? Chris is like... When Chris came to Sunderland, he'd already he already had success with Wales. He's like an established sort of character in the world of football. Simon Grayson was kind of building his career, and Sunderland was like a massive, massive test for him. Mm. So he would naturally be a bit more sort of cagey about everything.
Yeah, but I think just on a personality wise, Chris, I think quite enjoys having cameras around as long as the pressure wasn't too great. Yeah. I think that the situation changed that.
Also, we got to build that relationship from Chris from almost day one. So when he walked in, we were here. We were already making the series. Whereas with Simon, he was here doing his job, and then we arrived to make the series. So that played quite a big part as well.
Well, I'm getting the wrap-up cue. So I've got a couple of questions for you to ask about the second series with Stuart Donald and Jack Ross leading the line this time. Is it going to be a similar length, or can it be a bit longer, perhaps, since we've got a lot more exciting things happening this season? Or
In terms of episodes? Mm. It'll probably be a similar length. I think it's the right number, of episodes to tell a story over the course of a season.
But the kind of the register of it's different. Obviously, the team are doing a lot better, mm-hmm. And Charlie and Stuart are, well, it's not just a lot more open with us; they're a lot more open with everyone in general. In fact, we spoke about they're setting a new standard for the kind of openness and transparency. And just enjoyment of running a football club. So there's that side of it being brighter, but there's also, you're going to see a lot more of the inner workings of the club from that side.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the access they've given us at board level with the decisions they're making about players, about the club from a strategic point of view, it is going to blow people's minds. Absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have, obviously, it feels like a different club, just a completely different club for the next series.
Yeah.
But if series two goes well, which I'm sure it will, could we see three, four, perhaps?
There's nothing we want to do more. We'd happily roll this out for the rest of our careers. This is the dream for us.
Well, very exciting. This is coming out on Netflix tonight. Sutherland Till I Die. I'm sure you guys are very excited to see everyone's reaction to it as well.
It's amazing to you know, you film it and you work so hard on it, basically in dark rooms on your own,
mm-hmm.
and you think about how people are going to receive it. The first time you watch it with an audience is always an amazing experience, you know.
Is there anything you'd like to add, Suits?
No, I'm buzzing to see it tonight. I'm buzzing to see the reaction and to see how the, you know, people within the club and the fans react as well. It's and like we said earlier about the whole world reacting to it, that's an amazing thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you think that Peter Farrer, a taxi driver from Sunderland, is going to be known in Wyoming in America. Do you know what I mean? It's amazing.
Leo, Ben, also Suits, thank you for joining me. This has been Europa Report podcast with Johnny Goldsmith and Football 73 and the Sunderland Till I Die documentary. It'll be on Netflix tonight. I hope you're going to be watching. Well, I know you will. I know you're going to love it. But thank you for joining me, guys.
Pleasure.
Thank you
for having us.
We will see you next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.